No. See, there's no cringe emoji. Look, I can do laugh, peace sign, wave.
No.
Hey, horrible. Come on. Come on, Elijah. We need to see you with a camera standing on top of some wildlife you just killed, you know, with your shirt off, hair blowing in the wind. Come on, you know. You can do it.
Yeah, I mean that's coming up. That's coming right up. Be careful what you ask for.
That's your next act.
It is.
All right. Well, give us a little background on who you are. We're joking. Obviously, we're friends, and I'm, you know, Francisco. You and I just met, so I have a feeling we're going to be friends after this too. But Elijah, give us your elevator pitch of who you are and why you shoot and what you shoot.
How do you elevator pitch that?
You're in an elevator with Elon Musk, and you're trying to convince him in 5 minutes to give you $1 billion for this NFT project you're working on, and he wants to know who you are. What do you say?
Well, if I was in an elevator with Elon Musk right now, I'd punch him in the nuts. I'm just saying.
Okay.
Like, right in the nuts.
His financial advisor. How about that?
Oh, I'd also probably punch him harder in the nuts if I was his financial advisor.
That's
to
awesome.
Be honest,
idea. That's
yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, yes, not Elon.
Okay,
not a fan right now.
Somebody fan of. No.
That's good. Yeah, I've been shooting for about 15 years. Prior to COVID, there was a lot of travel, 150 to 200,000 miles a year. Wow. And now I actually spent the last month, 2 months working on projects and building a garden. So I'm like, my side hustle now is farming, which is actually kind of fun. So I may be a photographer for a little bit longer. If I can get the citrus to actually grow, maybe I'll find a new career. But the topics that I'm shooting are still mostly landscape and travel. Obviously, this NFT thing is new to all of us, the space and light, and getting this alpha collection out is pretty amazing. We're very, very close, 100 photographers and 200 photos. So the past few years have been a lot of building and developing and managing different things, putting together a new software package that I can't talk about yet, that you guys will hear about soon. And it's been a lot of fun, but photography is always intertwined, no matter how businessy, if that's a thing, it gets. There's always that center staple around the photography industry, or elevating the industry, or a lot of the times working in the background to help bigger things happen.
Yeah, it's interesting. As I've come to know you from afar, I kind of put you mentally in the category of the photopreneur, right? You're somebody who's been in the industry for a while. You know all the strings and levers to pull, and you know, and then the underlying bedrock of all that is just a ridiculously awesome travel portfolio that kind of says you know what you're talking about, and you walk the walk and talk the talk. So yeah,
and honestly, it's all business, you know. Like, if you look at that portfolio, I mostly just take shots from Francesco and Albert Dross. So if anybody wants the recipe for a successful portfolio, just steal their images. I say it's okay.
Yeah, embrace and extend. Hey, Francesco, with that, again, let's get a quick introduction to you before we dive into just talking about photography and NFTs and all that stuff. So what's your elevator pitch for, not Elon Musk, for somebody you admire? What would you tell him in the elevator?
Okay, if I'm with you in the elevator, I promise I will not punch you, so not like Elijah. Just kidding. No, I will use my 30 seconds just to say hello, guys. I'm Francesco Gola. You can call me Frank. Even my mother now call me Frank because it's easier. As you probably understand from my accent, my fun accent, I'm Italian. And I'm a escape photographer, actually. So I want to define myself like that because I really, really love seascape photography. I think that started just like an hobby and just for passion, like for most of the people out there. But then it became something more. So it was like really a shelter for me, where to go and where to escape from life, and where to enjoy the nature and the small things, like wine, of course. So happy to be here with you tonight. And I'm alone. Where? I consider Raya a big brother since ever, because I think I met him really at the beginning of my path in photography, and It's so great to be around him every time I can. So in a few weeks, we'll be together again. And happy to be here with you and to know new people.
Awesome. Very cool. Well, thanks and welcome to this. So this hour that we're doing here, everyone, this is an ongoing, recurring, I guess is the same thing, Twitter Spaces. Did I get that right, Laya? Twitter Spaces, right, is what we're speaking on? Spaces,
yeah. Until somebody we're not going to name buys it and then changes the name.
Yeah, I heard the name was changing to Musky or something like that. I don't know. So we'll see. Right,
that's good.
So anyway, this is an ongoing thing. Every Tuesday and Thursday, I think we've tentatively set the schedule for Tuesdays at 5 p.m. Pacific and Thursdays today at 10 a.m. Pacific, which is where we are right now. So we'll be doing these on various topics loosely around photography and NFTs and how they intertwine with each other. And it's a freeform spaces conversation. And I get to kind of, I don't want to use the word host because that makes it sound like a game show or something, but it's more of a, I'm here to prod the conversation and throw a log on the fire if it starts getting low. That's what I do. So I wanted to start there. So now that everyone knows each other, except me. So my name is Frederick Van Johnson. I'm a podcaster, photographer, ex-combat photojournalist from the United States Air Force. I run a podcast called This Week in Photo. It's at thisweekinphoto.com, which has been going for, we're in our, I believe, in earnest, in our 11th year. So that makes me an OG podcaster, I guess. And I'm working with the Light team to do these things. So these Twitter spaces, and we're building an awesome podcast and a couple of other things. So, you know, get to merge the chocolate and the peanut butter together and make something new. But this conversation, this Thursday, this light hour is about long exposures and anything else we feel like we want to talk about. And I wanted to kick it off with you, Elia. So you know, looking at your work, you obviously are a master of what you do and know your way around a light beam or two. When you assess, then we've talked about this on a podcast. I've had you on my podcast a couple of times, so I'm going to rehash this a little bit. Your process for when you're conceptualizing a photograph, you know, is it for the new guys out there, or the new people out there, do you go out and just bring your camera and a bunch of gear and you're like, you know what? I'm going to go take some shots. Oh, look at that bay. That looks like a good long exposure. Maybe I'll do a long exposure over there. Is it serendipitous like that? Or do you go out before you go out, do planning and say, okay, I'm going to go to this exotic place. And while I'm there, I'm going to do these four shots and they're going to look like this. And therefore I need this lens and, you know, this neutral density filter, et cetera. Do you go through that level of kind of preparation, either mentally or on a piece of paper, or is it more serendipitous?
I have a lot of paper notes. I just wanted to say too that if anybody wants to speak, raise your hand. We'll add you.
Yes.
What do we call that here, Frederick? Is it pop quiz? What do we call it when we bring somebody up?
Invite.
Yeah, let's use invite. Let's go with the classic one. Good. All done.
Yeah. So Occam's this is razor, bro. This is, Occam's razor.
Okay, power user. So this is a really interesting question because you can't take all the spontaneity out of photography or else it becomes very mechanical, right? So if we say the rules being composition and light and the binding element being light, that's measurable to a certain extent. So if it's photography for me, for my portfolio, I'll try to recognize that an area has potential. And I'll usually say, you know what? Three or four shots out of this whole week are going to be portfolio level. I think that's achievable with 8 days. If you don't sleep, that's like, you know, seven sunrises, seven sunsets. You can get three or four perfect lighting conditions in these areas. Probably already figured out where the sun is rising and setting. More importantly, figure out where it's rising because it rises so damn early. And then you kind of just go for it. But that spontaneity is important because no matter how much you plan, things kind of change. And in long exposure photography, you burn minutes, you know, so you can't just snap and move like you can with normal photography. I mean, Francesco's going to do 2 minutes. I'll try to do like 90 seconds. So your window of perfect light, sunrise and sunset, gets very narrow. So you kind of want to test everything out. So it's a little bit easier when you're shooting for yourself, even if you put a lot of pressure on yourself. But what I try to do if I'm not too tired is you give yourself those law of averages. You say 3-4 in a week is good. Maybe you get a couple more of areas that you didn't think of, or maybe just different compositions, different lighting, different testing. So if you really like an area, you can repeat it a few times until you're happy with it. Change compositions. That's when you can experiment with lenses, or you can explore something new. And that's what I like to do. So if I'm going to a part of Italy, I know this part of Italy and I know I can get these shots, and I've already figured out from previous trips, I want these other ones. But with a few extra days, I'm going to go ahead and scout another location that I know is going to be good in the fall, maybe, and see if it's doable, right? Because a lot of things change. People don't trim the trees. They grow up in the way. You know, there's so many variables. Scaffolding you can look up. If it's for a client, it can be a little bit more complicated because you can't say, you know what, I'm going to go for a couple weeks and you might get a couple photos. And it doesn't usually work. So I just wrapped up a project. I'm editing it right now as we speak, because it's a lot of merging. There's an itinerary. Here's over the course of 8 or 9 days, here's all the locations across the state that we need images for our marketing. We'd like them to be as good as possible, right? So then I kind of go and say, okay, well, I think we could do this at the sunrise or sunset. We have a chance, but I'm going to shoot it at different times. And since it's for marketing, that's when I'm also like, I know I'm going to be able to get what they need. And then I'm kind of exploring areas that we don't know. And I'm often finding a lot of things. And that's when I'm like, okay, you know, I think I got the wide shots and this is going to work. Let's see if we can do some, like, you know, telephoto stuff, you know. And that's really where that experimentation comes in, once I know that I've sort of met the parameters of what I'm trying to accomplish. And I think I planned a lot more in the beginning. And then as I got a little bit more experienced, I knew that over-planning is really a thing. And it can kind of ruin things. So you have to be, you know, you have to kind of be mindful of what you're trying to achieve. But you can't really be formulaic in the beginning of how it's going to turn out, because you're only going to disappoint yourself most of the time. So you have to be able to be flexible and understand that it's probably not going to work out. And in that case, if it's just for you, you can cry and drink wine. But if it's for the client, you know, you can't say, oh, it didn't work out. Not if it's 9 out of 9 that you got, that's great. I think I did. I got like 7 out of 9 or 8 out of 9 this time because of weather. So that's a win. You know, it's not like everything was a failure. Are they all to the level of portfolio shot that's going to hang in a gallery? No, absolutely not. But are they, you know, really good marketing images? Of course. You know, and you have to understand too, if I'm shooting for myself, you can see that one sunrise, right? That's it. You know, that might be months or years or whatever. But for this, that you need to have those shots. You need to have stuff with a blue sky, with the clouds, with all this stuff that they use, because we like things that are really dramatic. You know, some crushed values, you know, really like that. But most things you see in magazines are going to be a blue sky, because that's what people want. You know, they want to see it. And text has to go somewhere. So there's so many things that kind of factor in. But that's the main takeaway, is that you have to plan to be spontaneous, as silly as that sounds.
I love that. And folks, just another quick reminder, a lot of folks have joined the room since we started. If you guys want to join the conversation, just let us know, raise your hand, and we'll bring you up on stage. Francisco, I want to throw it to you, same question. You know, Elia kind of revealed his hand a little bit with his process, which kind of like his day of processing ending and getting to play Elden Ring or whatever. There's a carrot at the end of the day. After you get all the real work done, then you move over to the stuff that's more fun for you. Kind of the same thing in photography. Elia is saying, I'm paraphrasing, but get the client work done, all the shots that you absolutely have to get done, and then kind of, you know, play around a little bit and get some more serendipitous shots. Is that your process too, Francisco? Are you a planner, or are you a more seat of the pants shooter?
Well, I definitely love the approach of Elia, and I think we have almost the same approach now. I mean, I have a big issue that, my background is as an engineer, so I'm very, very nerdy. So planning to me is a thing. So, and sometimes over planning is the real issue. No, but I really think that for my works, I mean, planning is something really important, because I mean, of course, if you have to work for a client, maybe you have more strict time and you have to be a bit more flexible to adapt more to the situation. But when I'm working for my portfolio, for my personal trips, I really try to plan, because I'm aware to the fact that I mean, planning doesn't mean that you're going to get the good shot. You're not going to get what you want for sure. But to me, planning is a tool that let me, let's say, to be in the right place, hopefully at the right time. So that's what planning is for me. But the issue is that for landscape photography in general, and more specifically, maybe for long exposure photography, that is the field that I really love, I mean, planning can bring you to the 100% because, of course, you can be at the right place. You can go to a place where you know that the sun is going to set there. Maybe it's the right season, you know, the right tide. But there is a lot of unpredictable things. And, I mean, mostly related to weather. Of course, weather, it's so important. And so I really tried to understand way before going to a place what it will be likely. But at the end, when you are on the field, I mean, I always say that every battle plan resists to the first cannon shot. So it means that you can plan whatever you want, but when you will be there, something will happen, and so you have to adapt. I think that to me, planning is what brings you there and give you the tools when you are on the field to adapt to the real situation. So I really love to plan, and I will continue to plan. But yeah, when I'm on the field, I think it's really important to understand the situation, to adapt to the situation. So I really go, if I can, of course, but for the timing, I love to be there maybe a couple of hours, maybe before the sunset, just to stay seated, just to enjoy the fresh breeze, the waves, maybe with a bottle of wine. No, without the wine. But I mean, I really have to merge myself with nature. So in that way, I think I can really bring to my images what I want to transmit, so what I want to give. But yeah, I think that, I mean, I'm a bit over planner, but just because I'm a super nerdy guy.
Yeah. I wonder about that too, just with and I overlay that with photography education, right? And both of you are experienced shooters, and people aspire to create work that you're creating. So in a lot of ways, they're going to listen and say, yeah, I'm going to do exactly what they're doing because I see where it leads to. But if you're a newer beginning person, I feel like there's maybe a middle ground in there where plan, of course, because you get out in the field and, like, what was it, Colin Powell or whoever said, no battle plan ever survives first contact with the enemy. So if you're planning and you go out there and then you're like, okay, everything's different than what I planned, now what, right? If you're a beginner and you don't have all the experience that you guys have. What do you guys, Francisco, I'll throw it back to you. What do you advise the newer shooter in terms of a good balance between planning and the serendipity, right? So should they, I don't know, I mean, this is a weird question, but should they, you know, in some situations not plan at all and just throw themselves out there kind of like commando style and like, okay, I'm going to see what I can get with just my bare skills, and then other times go out and plan it to the hilts, Francisco style, engineer style, and say, okay, every detail's like this. I'm using photo pills. I know where the sun is going to be, you know, and nail every little detail as much as possible. Should there be missions like that to get until they get to a point where they can just go out there and be closer to what you guys are?
Well, actually, I think it's a very good question. I mean, I think that planning is a friend, but over planning is an enemy. So you have always to find the right balance. And when you are at the beginning, yes, it's probably quite complicated to know where to stop with planning and where to start with the serendipity or whatever it is. My advice actually is, let's say at the beginning, I would suggest not to overplan or not even to plan. I mean, just to enjoy, just to experiment, just to try, just to fail. I think that the greatest lesson I've learned from failing something. I mean, from making mistakes on the field, because reading a mistake on a forum or on a website is not like making a mistake on the field. So I remember that at the beginning, maybe I was going to the right place in the wrong season. So I was expecting the sun in front of me, and then the sun was maybe behind of me. Or I was expecting a nice storm coming, and I don't know, there were people swimming in the sea because it was too hot. So I think that when you when you want to learn something, you have to smash your face on the wall. I mean, you have to try, you have to fail. And so my real advice is to experiment. I mean, thanks God. I mean, with photography, you can experiment now with the digital photography. You don't have even to waste so much money because everything is digital. You just can sell the memory card, you format the memory card, and you have done. But yeah, I would suggest, of course, to check, start to understand maybe what's the best season to go in a place, where is the best moment of the day, where to go in that specific place. But then just go there and just try to take your picture, just try to understand where the clouds are moving, try to experiment long exposure. So try and fail. That's my advice for who is approaching now this kind of photography.
I love it. All right, Elijah, let's dive in a little bit on the more technical side of long exposures and what the, you know, things have changed a little bit, right? In terms of what it takes to create a long exposure. For example, back in quote the day, holding up quote fingers, back in the day, it was, you absolutely must have a tripod to do these things. You have to have X, you know, you need a neutral density filter if you're going to do, you're going for a specific kind of drag shutter look and all that. The tools have changed a little bit, but not a whole lot. What's Elijah Locardi's approach to creating one of those iconic long exposures that you do?
Yeah, the gear is, the biggest problem with the gear is it's really expensive. another piece of glass to put in front. So this is a tough. Now, thankfully, basically all the companies, most of the companies are creating stuff that is pretty extraordinary. I work with Format High Tech and Nisi as well. I just tested all their stuff in Puerto Rico last year. I was using like a 15 stop filter and doing like 8-minute things. And it was crystal clear and no color cast and super sharp at 100 megapixels. And I'm like, man, this would have made it so much easier to learn. But I think that you have to experiment with it. It's a huge pain. Even if you read everything, I still made so many mistakes. And what's hard about it is you can't force a lot of it, even though you're trying to force it with a filter. And I'll explain that, right? Like if you're thinking about using filters for long exposure, you're probably trying to do a couple things. And that's either to soften the clouds or blur the water, right? Like those are the two main things. Graduated filters allow you to sort of mitigate the light in a gradient, top, bottom, sides, or whatever. But arguably now, yes, you're going to get a better shot out of camera, but you can probably recover some of those highlights, right, in post. So it's kind of a mix and match. And you also have to understand that the more huge pieces of glass that you put in front of your camera, a lot of these situations you find yourself shooting in are windy and wet and salty. So you get this big ass piece of glass that's now absorbing all of these elements that you're trying to capture. So you got to know how to sort of mess with it and change it, because if you can practice it and kind of know what your threshold is, because just like anything else, when you start, you're like, I'm going to do a 30 year exposure, you know, like you just think it's going to be crazy. And then you start doing it, you're like, man, I think that, you know, somewhere between 30 and 90 is like perfect. And then 2 minutes is dreamy. And then after that, it's like, you know, with this diffuse light is cool, but I'm not really adding much to it, right? And you're like, what do I do for this 6 minutes that I'm not doing anything because my camera's shooting? And what really compounds this, and I think Francesca will agree, is the time frame. So if you have nice clouds in the afternoon with the sun at your back, experiment with these exposures. Like even if you have to put 15 stops, see what the difference is between 30 seconds and 90 seconds. Because if you're trying to catch that window of a couple minutes of sunrise and sunset, you really only have a few tries if you're doing 30 seconds, maybe two tries at 2 minutes. So you have to decide like what is it going to take and sort of when to shoot. And I think that even though I've been doing it for years, I'm still learning as I go. And what typically happens is the more you do it, the more you're battle hardened. As the conditions are changing, as things don't work out, like you said, Frederick, it never goes quite as planned, you can adapt. And you're like, okay, this isn't going to work. I need to put a polarizer because I need to see what's under there. There's starfish there now. You've already done it. It's kind of like it's muscle memory. You're not fiddling with it. You know, they're not on individual cases. You know how to get to them. You know, this kind of stuff is kind of important, that agility. And then it just kind of comes with testing. But the first thing you usually start with is like a 10-stop neutral density filter that will definitely buy you 30 seconds during the day. And you have to understand the waterfall stuff, half a second, 2 seconds. And when I say force it, so this is where it gets kind of fun. If you think about forcing a long exposure in a neutral light environment, going up to F22 is going to give you a half second, 2 seconds, you know, if you're shooting a waterfall and it's overcast. But then we know that our lenses aren't at their best there. Mm-hmm. You know, we really mm-hmm. want that F8 to F11 or whatever our magic number is. F8 is the answer, kids. That's the answer. Just use F8. But what we don't want to force to is then we use the filters, right? Like, so you don't want to do that on the filters. So you put like a 6-stop on and you're like, oh, you know, I just can't get it. I'm going to go up to F22. Well, now you're adding that plus the filter plus everything else. It's going to get worse. So you're still working in that magic zone. So you kind of have to know, okay, you know, I can get with F8, F11, you know, I'm getting like 1 over 150. If I put a 10 stop, it's going to be like, you know, I'm not doing the math in my head. This is going to be totally wrong. But it's like, oh man, it's 5 seconds. Let's put this on. And then you're dealing with changing light. And the only way to really know which ones or when you're going to need to change them or which ones to carry out in the water that you know to change when an octopus is attacking your leg, you're not freaking out. Like, where's my filter? That has happened to me. You kind of already know. So that stuff takes time, and you invest in the gear and you just kind of practice and test, and don't put too many restrictions or pressures on yourself. And, you know, Francesco, I use his, you got to see his Google Earth things, man. Like, it's so good. When, like, I use his planning. I'm lazy, I got to tell you. Like, I use his because it's awesome. Like, you know, but this is important. You know, you have to know access, all these things. But if you're going to do this long exposure, give yourself enough time. You know, spend a couple days there. Understand it, experiment a little bit, because everything ends up looking a lot different than you expect, even if you've done it for a few years, and you're going to quickly burn up your time. That's it. So you can't expect to get a perfect shot really ever. Long exposure, like, you're just like hoping that something good is going to happen, that it all comes together.
I want to follow up on that. I have a whole thing I want to talk about. We're already at half hour past the hour here. Jordan Banks is in, and I think you have speaker powers in here. Jordan, you want to chime in the conversation? Feel free to jump in if you want to dive in here.
Hey guys, how you doing?
Hey,
Frederick, it's nice to meet you, man. I think we've had some email, or I've sent you an email. Elia.
Yes.
Yeah, it's been a while, Elia, since, I don't know, Japan, was that 2018 or 19 or something like that? We bumped into each other, and I've never actually met you, Francesco, but I believe that Robbie managed to get me some Nisi filters from my drone off of you when I was in Italy, so I appreciate that, man. I just wanted to say hello, really, and just touch base with everyone. I haven't seen anyone in a while, and I thought I'd jump in this space, but everything these guys are saying is spot on. I'd just be saying exactly the same thing, I think, as what they said on every topic, pretty much. But yeah, happy That's to cool. chime in with yeah. things as I go. But yeah, I won't repeat what they've just said. Cause...
yeah, it's all true, right? And I want to throw it back to Francesco. Can you piggyback on what Elia was saying in terms of, you know, it's kind of whack-a-mole trying to get the perfect shot, right, with the skies, and if you're trying to blur the water, and, you know, these sorts of things. Do you or either of you, you know, leverage, or in your planning process, look at, okay, I'm just going to shoot the sky, and I'm going to composite that in later with these mountains, and then I want the water really, you know, cottony, so I'm going to, you know, expose that separately. Do you expose different elements of your shots separately and then combine them, or does it all have to be done in camera at the time?
So, apart from saying that, I really underline every single line of Elia, because I truly believe he said really the same vision that I have. Well, in terms of combining images, so I'm not saying that, I'm not one of the guy that say, oh, if you combine images or different exposure, you will burn in hell. So I'm not like that. But actually,
he used to tell me that.
Yeah, I will still tell you, especially if I'm drunk. But I can say now with everybody listening. No, Actually, for my works, 100% of my shoots are in a single exposure, so I don't combine anything. And this is mainly for two reasons. The first one is that I'm absolutely not able to combine picture together in a realistic way. No, but when I started with this kind of photography, well, my post-production knowledge was very, very low. And so I invested more in playing on the field. And then at that point, I started to understand that having fun on the field, so trying to get the right picture in just one shot on the field, it was something fun. It was a way to spend my time in the nature. So it was something that I wanted to do more than working on post-production, even if, of course, I do a lot of post-production. But in terms of long exposure, I think that combining images can be really challenging if you want to achieve a good result. I try to explain because maybe so basically you combine different images to create a long exposure when maybe your camera is not capable to get everything at the same time. So maybe the sky is too bright, and so you have to take an exposure for the sky and then maybe an exposure for the background, for the foreground and for the middle ground. Well, if you do a short exposure, let's call it like that, it can work. I mean, it's just up to you. Instead of using graduated filter, you take a couple of pictures or more and then you combine. But when you work with long exposure, there are different issues. So the first one is that, I mean, simulating an ND filter is not yet very possible in terms of quality. So if you try to merge together, stack together a lot of short exposure to make the water blurry, yes, you can get something good, but not as good as using an ND filter, at least for my experience. But I think the biggest challenge, the big challenge is the fact that, let's say that you are taking a 2 minute exposure because it's my, let's say it's my magic shutter speed time. So most of my images are between 2 and 3 minutes, like Elia said. So if I'm taking a 2 minute exposure for the sky because there are so nice clouds that are moving and I try to blurry them so to have a nice movement of the clouds. And then after 2 minutes, I have to take a second exposure for the foreground and for the middle ground. So if I do like that, when I merge the two images, I will have the clouds on a, in a specific part of the sky, in a portion of the sky, and then the reflection of the clouds on the water is somewhere else because the 2 minutes after the clouds are somewhere else. So you don't have something congruent in your image, and so this is something that could be an issue. And moreover, as I said before, everything else in life, timing is crucial. So when we take this kind of picture or landscape picture, we always love to take picture maybe at the golden hour or nearby the sunrise or sunset on this kind of moment. So moments that are lasting really few minutes, maybe a good light can last 3-4 minutes, not more. So maybe you are taking a good picture, the perfect picture with the perfect light in 2 minute exposure in your first image. And then after 2 minutes, you take another picture, but the light changed. So basically you are going to merge two images, not only with a cloud position that is not congruent to the reflection of that cloud, but also with a light that is completely different. Maybe the clouds was covering the sun, and in the picture of the foreground, the sun is out. So it's really hard, in my opinion, to get something perfect in an image, in post-production, if you compose long exposure images. But again, that's just my experience. So at the end, the most important thing is to have fun.
Yeah.
Maya, do you agree with that?
Yeah, it's interesting too, because I know there are some ways to do that. Like with the Photoshop statistics, you can do multiple exposures and get the sky. And yeah, you can get a pretty interesting water thing, but it's kind of cool if you don't have any filters, right? Like definitely do that because it's pretty cool. It's a really neat effect and you have a lot of control. But when it comes to skies, I think that's easier to do that method with. And if it's going a certain direction, you can add blur. Like there's a little bit more artistic license with that. But with the water, I think that usually where I'm looking now is not just if the water is a reflection, is the water of a subsurface and sort of the color. So I've been using different polarizing techniques depending on where I'm shooting to try to see into the water or balance a certain amount of the sky. At sunset, I actually want reflected light and I still want to be able to see through. This doesn't really work on multiple images. It's kind of weird because all of the details under the water, they're kind of moving. If there's algae, it just gets to be kind of a mess if you try to blend it together. So I've never really been able to get the compositing multiple exposure thing to work when there's like rocks and algae and barnacle and stuff like that. It's a masking nightmare that I don't even try to do.
Yeah. Yeah. But you know, the other side of that coin is these software out there is coming a long way, right? We've got Adobe with sky replacement and I mean, selection tools that are borderline magic now, even on mobile. We've got Skyloom with, you know, sky replacement, all the things that they're doing with AI and on one, it goes on and on and on. So as seasoned pros that understand the mechanics of light and how to do this stuff manually, how do you advise someone coming in now, you know, or relatively new to photography with this, you know, I would argue that this embarrassment of tools weren't here when we were kind of messing around with f-stops and shutter speeds, but now these tools are here. Should they embrace these tools? Should new people embrace these tools and make them just automatically part of their workflow? Or would you suggest, no, wax on, wax off first, right? And learn f-stop, shutter speeds, ISO, do it all manually, graduated filters, all this stuff, neutral density, before you start using the quote crutch of artificial intelligence or just really smart programming. I don't know. Francisco, what do you think? Or Elijah, whoever wants to take it.
I was just going to say it doesn't have to be one or the other. They're not mutually exclusive, right? It's a situation that demands a certain thing, right? So yep. If the technology works and that's your output, that's great. But if you run into a situation where you have to customize it, you're going to have to learn. So usually just kind of fill in the gaps when you start to reach the limits of that technology or check the output. Depending on what you're shooting, what the export is, if it's raw, all those things. But I think you should embrace them. I'm wary about relying on things for everything if they're not meant for everything. So to kind of back up that knowledge isn't a bad idea. But if you're just kind of moonlighting in this and it works, then that's great. Go for it.
Yeah. Yeah. Francisco, what do you think? You know, the new person coming in, should they... You know, I like to Elias' point, there is no or, right? It could be an and, but you know, if you're facing a decision, you know, hey, I'm once in a lifetime going to be here in Ha Long Bay in Vietnam, and I want to do a long exposure, and I only have a limited time to do it. Do you fall back and rely on your skills, or in that situation with limited time, let me just get the shots and I'll figure that out in post, like for the new person, not for yourself. What would you recommend?
Well, yes, if you step into photography now and you have all these tools, of course, you are tempted to take advantage of them. And I think we have to take advantage of technology, but we have also to try to understand the limit of the technology and what we really want, because not just because a technology can do something for you, you won't let it do it for you. For example, well, to a well-trained eye, I think that a sky replacement with one of the software can be easily detected because, I mean, light follow physical rules. So if you put a certain kind of sky just because you have a flat sky that day and the foreground and the middle ground are completely different, well, you can spot this. But apart from that, so having a good skill in using that software, I think that at the end, at least for me, so the photography, taking a good picture, of course, if it's for a client, if it's for a specific, I don't know, service that I have to do, of course, you have to deliver something. But when I'm out shooting, I think that what I really want to pursue is not to get the perfect picture, but it's more the experience that we have behind the picture. So if I go to Vietnam for the first time and I have just one night for trying to get that long exposure that I had in my mind, well, if I'm able to to take it, it would be great, of course. But if for some reason the weather is not going to cooperate, I think that in any case, well, I will have a great memory of going to the field, trying to fight with against the natural elements to take my picture. I might be struggling for the composition. So sometimes failing is a good memory to me. And so an advice for those are, let's say, stepping into photography, this kind of photography with all these software is, of course, to try them and to try to have fun with them. But then... I think you have to ask to yourself if you want to really enjoy photography or you prefer to enjoy, let's say, I don't know, post-production or creating art in your monitor. So it's up to you. There is no, I think it's impossible to set a line that is good or bad, but it's just up to you. So I really love, and I started photography and I continue with my photography path just because I really love to stay in the nature. So for me, that line is really far from using this kind of software. But I mean, if you love them and if you like to, yes, to just take a picture and then let's fix it completely in post-production, it's not wrong. It's just up to you. I think it's really important to define what you want to get.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. It depends on what your motivations are, right, Elia?
Yeah, and coming from a software development perspective now, there's no reason why people shouldn't be able to get a great photo, you know, with the click of a button. But it is the click of a button. Your iPhone's the click of a button. And I love portrait mode. You know, it's all AI processes. And it does usually a great job for what it is. So the long exposure stuff in the phones, the mobile technology is amazing, right? Because you can set this up on a tripod. And you can create a time lapse, you can create a long exposure, you can do star trails, you can capture the Milky Way. I mean, this is fantastic. I want this to be as readily available for people to be able to explore their creativity without running into roadblocks. I mean, that's part of what I work on all the time, software stuff, sky replacement included. And I want that to be so easy that people can do it and get exactly what they want. And yeah, you know, if you look at it, there's science, sure. You know, it doesn't mean that you can do it, that it's going to be good, right? It's just that it's available. And in that way, you know, it might, you know, show somebody, hey, you know, I really wanted to do this. Look what I got. And then once they say, hey, you know, well, you know, I really want this to be different. Because the other thing you remember about these instant things is there is some functionality, but you don't have full control. You know, you click on it and then it does it. And you're like, oh, that's good or that's bad. Let's try again. So that's great in the beginning, you know, and maybe it's great for everything because that's just for Instagram or something. But if you really love it, you start to upgrade or learn more when you find that you're limited by something or you want to control something else. And that's a good place to be. And then you kind of like think about, huh, you know, maybe there's a method here.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of this is predicated on the assumption that this is all hobbyist stuff, right? Because all the rules change if you're doing pro work. And you have a time constraint and a budget and the expectation of excellence from the client, then the experimentation stuff, you probably want to slide to the end of the ring around, I think, right?
And all of us are photographers now. Everybody with a mobile phone is a photographer. So this distinction of professional, non-professional, you know, it's impossible and it's not even needed anymore. You know, you can't say this is a professional way to do it, this isn't. Because the market, everything's different. So if we think about it that way, we're trying to take the complexity out of things so people can be fully creative. At least from a marketing background, you'd appreciate that, right? Unlimited, unleashed creativity, whatever the tagline is. It's true. You know, that's the ultimate goal with technology, to not be cumbersome, but be complementary to your art, right? You want it to work based on what you want, not try all the technology and pick the one that's the best. The ultimate intention is creativity unbounded, right? So that's the intention of this stuff, is to say, oh, you know, I can now make this look like this without, you know, having to spend 2 years learning Photoshop or whatever. So it's kind of a combination of embracing the technology through experimentation, because the nice thing about presets or LUTs or all these things that you may not use, and I didn't for a long time until I started developing stuff. And I'm like, I better understand why and when and how. But I started to realize that, you know, I would probably not apply these to my portfolio images, but it gave me a lot of ideas on how I might edit something like that. So it's kind of a test, you know, you're not in fully embracing, you don't have to, but it'd be a mistake to not try something, because you may not use it, but you may end up using like 3% of something you learned from it. And that's really how you continue to evolve.
It's like, and I wonder if you both agree with this. It reminds me of Legos, right? So back in the day, you could just buy Legos loose. Well, you still can, but you buy Legos loose and you can build whatever you want, right? It's unlimited, like you said, like unlimited creativity, bound only by your imagination. But then you get that, you go into a Lego store or wherever, and you're like, okay, I don't know what the heck I'm going to do. And then Lego came up with these pre-built packs of, oh, you want to build a, you know, Iron Man or whatever, these are the pieces to put it together, and these are the instructions. And I think part of that, part of the benefit of that was people that are really into Lego, as you know, like people that are really into photography, want to take it deeper. I'm like, okay, now I understand the fundamentals of how these things work. Now I can build whatever the heck I want to build with the same set if they wanted to. So I think there's an analog there of like with LUTs and presets getting you partially there and helping you understand what it takes to get there. And then if you're willing and you have the need, then you can say, okay, now I really want control over how these long exposures or how to blur this beach and how that works. So let me take it deeper than what the software can get me to. And I want to remind folks that are in this space, if you guys want to join in the conversation, go ahead and raise your hand and we'll bring you on stage. You can join in. Craig Colvin, I see you in here lurking. You're welcome to come up on stage and chat with us. I know you're not shy. As we get close to the end of the hour here, though, I want to switch the conversation a little bit towards, there's a bunch to talk about. On my list here, I want to talk about animation and video and how does that stuff affect your work. But before we get to that, and if we get to that, I want to just talk about what Francisco brought up earlier. And that's the idea of enjoying the situation that you're in. Right. And I hit this a lot when I was shooting in the military, in the Air Force. I feel like I missed my time in the Air Force for the most part, a lot of it, because most of it was spent looking through the viewfinder. Like I shot rocket launches and aerials and all kinds of stuff, but I never really saw the shot because I never saw it with my own eyes because I was always looking through the viewfinder. I wonder if that kind of phenomena or that kind of thing affects you guys, you know, especially when you're out doing landscape type photography. You're in this exotic place, Francisco, for example. You're out there doing this great landscape. Do you take the time to enjoy yourself and absorb it with your own eyes versus through the targeting computer, right? Do you enjoy the spot and make memories in that spot, or is it all about the photography? And then when you leave, you have that photograph. I don't know. What do you think, Francisco?
Well, great question, because, well, I think that for myself, I mean, for my personal portfolio, the ultimate goal is really having a picture that is like a time machine. So for me, a picture should be a way to travel back in time and to travel to in a different place to, collect memories in my mind of that moment, of that situation. So it's like really a postcard in a good way. But it's a way to go back in time. And so when I'm in the field, I really try to enjoy every second, really. But let's say, I told you before that when I'm out shooting, if it's possible, of course, for the timing, I always love to be maybe on the field a couple of hours before the sunset, because I really just want to sit there to feel the grass under my feet, to just look at the sky and the clouds moving fast. So I really want to collect memories of that moment. Then when the situation turned to be really good, I mean, and after a while and after a bit of experience, at a certain moment you say, okay, it will be the night. So you start to understand that you are going to take a picture and probably that picture will be good. So I think on that moment, you lose track of everything, time, space, who you have around you, if somebody's calling you, you don't feel anything else, but it's just you and that moment. And so you take the picture. So at the end, that picture, it's again, to me at least, is something that brings you back to that moment. But sometimes, of course, it's not going like that. So maybe it starts to rain or the weather is not as expected. And in that moment, I mean, at the beginning, I was really frustrated. But that frustration was ruining my photography career, let's say, because if when I was going out, especially in landscape photography, I was expecting to take a picture every time I was going out, of course it was not possible. So after a while, I started to be really frustrated in fading. But after a while, I understood that actually the ultimate goal was to enjoy that moment, enjoy that contact with nature. So just sitting there, even under the rain, could be something fun. And so it's a good story to tell to your friend when you're back home in front of a nice glass of wine. So I don't know if I replied properly to your question, but yes, I mean, I try to use photography as a time machine to go back in that moment, because the moment is the real goal of my photography, at least.
Yeah, it's like it's a memory bookmark, right? Elia, you and I had a conversation a while ago. I think it was last year, and we were talking about this place in Japan that you photographed. And when you photographed it the first time, it was, you know, sort of pristine, very classic Japan, you know, with the, you know, cherry blossoms and all the things. And then you went back a couple of years later, and it was different. And you attributed, I think in the interview, you attributed some of that change to tourism being increased to that area, maybe in part because of the photographs that you did there. And people are like, oh, man, this is amazing. I got to go there. So same question as I posed to Francisco with when you're out there shooting, are you taking time to absorb the location? Because in the case of that Japanese location, maybe it's not there, you know, when you try to go back again. Maybe this is the last time that you're going to be able to capture it looking like this, right? So, I don't know. Elia, do you take time out to smell the roses while you're shooting?
Yeah. I mean, Francesco is spot on, right? You have to kind of have the experience. And if you're fortunate enough to travel a lot, it's easy to get jaded too. And I think when you put pressure on yourself, there's expectations. So with expectations come disappointment, right? And I think Francesco and I, we know like 2010 to 13, 14, that Ryanair effect didn't really start happening until 2014, 15, and 16. And that's when the disproportionate balance of tour buses and everything for the Wanaka tree, or, you know, these crowds, this is still relatively new, right? But the idea of putting the camera down becomes really important, right? So if you're going to budget a couple trips a year, you definitely want time, and you can use the light to your advantage, right? Like you can shoot during the nice times, then do all the tours during the day and spend time. You have to balance that. And I think what happened with me was I'd start to, you know, have this mental dialogue where I'm in this beautiful place. Like I'm in Vernazza and I'm like, you know, it's raining and I'm getting all mad because, you know, I'm there and blah, blah, blah. I want the tried like 10 times. And I have to remind myself sometimes and snap yourself out of it. It's like you're standing in one of the most beautiful places in the world and you're complaining about the weather. Like, you know, how, you know, this is not the goal of photography in itself, right? Like you need the photos sometimes, but man, you have to enjoy it and you have to be aware of it. It helps your photography. It helps your soul, like Francesco said, but it's really important lesson as a human. And I think that social media has exacerbated this issue with a lot of us, the influencer culture, the one-a-days, all that kind of stuff. Pressure to perform, to show results, to feel like your voice is out there can be very damaging to your art. So depending on how you're trying to build your career, your profile, whatever it is, or just, you know, reach out to people and get feedback, you have to balance that. And, you know, sometimes you have to let some of it go. And I think that I overcorrected for a while, and for a few years, people were really shocked that I didn't shoot anything. Like, oh, we're in this place for a week. Yeah, I might shoot. I just stopped because I was like, I need a break. You know, I want to, you know, really just focus on these places and these people and everything. And after doing that for a little while, I sort of relearned how to manage it. And started to be able to sort of build projects that were a little bit more cultural, you know, and then obviously photography ties into it. And I think that this balance is really important. And social media doesn't go away, this pressure doesn't go away, but good art always stands out. And you have to remind yourself, you want to say something, communicate something when you have something to communicate. If you feel like you're forcing it, don't, you know, and Albert Dross is really great. Like we have the same rule. Don't ever post something the same day you edit it. Like, give it some time to breathe, you know, close it, open it, and be like, oh, Oh, I dialed that to 11. I should pull that back. Ugh, it's cringy. I'm glad I didn't send that. You know, these little things, you know, this is what you're passionate about. And there's plenty of time too. And long exposure is great for that. You know, I feel like, you know, a lot of it, like with the 2 minutes, it's like 2 minutes is kind of the average. I think we're pretty set. 2 minutes is great for exposure. Like it's just the perfect 90 seconds to 2 minutes. So like you have time. You know, you can sit there, relax. It's on the tripod. You can sit there next to the camera, and then you look at it, make little adjustments, take it again. You have time to do both. You know, there's no reason why you can't do both, and you have to remind yourself that. You know, you're fortunate to be there. It's an amazing place, and that's all that really matters in the end.
I was going to say, if you're Francisco, in that 2 minutes, you're sipping wine, you know, while you're waiting on that exposure to draw.
Yeah, we did.
Of course.
Set the settings first.
Francisco's got the wine.
Set the settings first.
That's the secret. That's the secret filter, guys. You know, no, not an ND10, not an ND64. It's just wine, the perfect filter.
Yes, just and then every wine. Photo's awesome, and everybody's happy. The end.
I want to bring Craig Colvin on the stage. He's a photographer I've known for quite some time. Lives in relatively close to me here in the Bay Area. Craig, are you on the line? What do you have to add to this conversation?
I am. Yeah, I had a couple comments. You're talking about, you know, in enjoying where you are as opposed to just taking photos, and that brought up. I went to 2 shuttle launches. And I ended up photographing the entire time, and I don't feel like I've ever been to a shuttle launch. I've shot everything through my viewfinder, right?
Yeah.
So I have been a lot like Aliyah lately, where I will just go and everyone's taking photos, and I'll just sit down and just take in the scene. So, you know, maybe I've overcorrected that way, but, you do have to take time to enjoy where you are, because right, photography gets me to these beautiful places, and I don't want to just experience them through my viewfinder.
Yeah, I agree 100%. Yeah, that's a phenomenon, I think, especially with these older cameras. I know, Francisco, you probably have a Z9 or something over there, but the older cameras that black out when you make the exposure, you're literally not seeing the shot. You're not seeing anything. So, I
see that. Yeah, actually, I'm still using old gear, so I know that struggle. But yeah, I agree. I mean, sometimes you are so funny what you're doing that you don't even feel that you was there at the end. So it's strange. Yeah.
And going back to the conversation about, you know, the sky or the conditions may not be right when you go there, it reminded me of the gentleman at Aperture Academy. I'm drawing a blank on his name, Frederick.
Aperture.
Yeah, he had the gallery in Campbell, and we used to meet there.
Yes, I remember. I got to think of his name, though. I know exactly.
Yeah. Anyway, he had some of the most iconic photos of all these great locations.
Machu Picchu,
and Mesa Arch. And I asked him. I said, you know, I've been to Mesa Arch, and I just, you know. It was just nowhere even close to that. And he goes, well, I went there 14 times. You know, I went to Machu Picchu 9 times. That's how he was getting these epic shots. And I had this epiphany that I'm going one time. So I'm not going to necessarily get the greatest shot. So it's okay for me to, you know, do it in post-production, add some sky or clouds or whatever, if that's what I want, you know, to make it be the shot I want it to be, because I'm not going to go back.
Yeah. Interesting. Well, guys, I want to wrap this up. Craig, since you were just chatting and you contributed, what's your URL if you want to check out some of this work? I know you've been doing some crazy cenote work down in Mexico. Where should people go check this stuff out at?
Well, I'm here on Twitter at Craig Colvin, or website is craigcolvinphotography.com.
Awesome. Cool, Craig. Good to hear your voice. Thanks for chiming in. And Francisco, I want to throw it to you to close us out, too, before we end on Aliyah. Aliyah mentioned this Google Earth thing that you're working on. I made a note to kind of follow up on that. What is that? Is that a bunch of locations that you tagged that we should all go? Are these Francisco Kodak moment locations?
No, I think it was referring to the fact that, yes, in my nerdy moment, especially after a good glass of wine, I start to explore and scout and make the digital scouting with Google Earth. And now you can enjoy on Google Earth also 3D reconstruction of places. So it's so great because now we have so many coastline that are three-dimensional on Google Earth. And it's so good because you really can, let's say, really simulate the composition that you're going to take on that place on that day. So it's quite creepy because, I mean, it's removing everything from the exploring moment when you're on the field. So it's really nerdy, but it's so funny. So I enjoy with Elia to do this with a good vinyl playing on the background and a glass of wine and making nerdy stuff.
You can find access points. You're like, I don't know if we can get to it. It's like, there's a road, and they check
over.
Wow, like there's a little patch of grass. I think, okay, look, I think we can get between that house or something. Like, it's so creepily accurate. Like, it's a 3D relief of the area. And then you can do the sun, and you can say, okay, yeah, you can get these rocks in the foreground. It's pretty cool. And yeah, we geek out to that like when we're gonna shoot the next morning or something, like, oh, what about over here? It's fun, actually, and it's striking how good
Rio Barrio is. It was a Rio Barrio.
it doesn't mean you don't get lost. Don't listen to the GPS.
Like, how far are you guys taking that? Are you like finding the location in Google Earth and then launching like, you know, photo pills or something to make sure you know where the sun's going to be? Do you take it to that level, or is it just to find the spot?
I think it's a mix of things because, yeah, you start to look on that thing and then you say, okay, it could be cool here. And then you start maybe to open photo pills, you take the websites about weather and you put everything together. Unfortunately, there is no a real universal application for everything, at least so far.
Not yet. All right. Well, Francesco, where should people go to follow you? Obviously, here on Twitter, but where else can they find your work?
Okay, thanks. So you can find me on Instagram as a main platform. So it's Francesco Gola, so my full name, or on my website that is, again, my francescogola.com. So you can find me there, and I hope you can even contact me if you have a question about what we spoke about today.
Fantastic. Thanks for coming on. It's great to hear your voice.
Thanks for inviting me.
Absolutely. We'll do it again. Elia Locardi, I want to leave it to you to close us out and maybe tell us a little bit about Light. I know you're involved in the Light project, and also where can people go to consume your amazing imagery?
Well, I definitely answer messages on social media, but I think it's been like over a year since I posted anything to Instagram or updated my website or anything, but you can still contact me and there's plenty of stuff there. Light has been a really fun project in the NFT world. We have the first collection, which we thought was only going to take a couple months to put together, but is actually like 7 or 8 months. We have 100 very talented photographers, some of which are in this room, and 200 images, and the final curation was this morning, actually, and we're tightening up that final selection. So all year we've been doing submissions and rounds, and it's quite exciting. You know, I actually have not ever minted an NFT, but I've been sort of helping consult and develop projects since I knew about this for the year and the before times, you know. So it's really exciting because we have a lot of you know, really, really talented people, you know, a lot of photographers that I actually discovered through this process that I'm really excited about. And it just really shines. You know, we're really representing all of the world, all of the genres and locations and peoples. And it feels really good. And honestly, after 6, 7, 8 months of all this, it's so cool that it's, you know, it's going to be out soon. So this is going to be the first release by light.art. And we'll follow up. There'll be, you know, tighter curated collections from solo artists and different experimental things. We certainly have a long list of things and a very short list of team members. They're kind of like all here right now. Well, one's asleep. So there you go. We can't always get things done, but it is really exciting. You know, I'm really happy for everybody that's part of it. Really, really thankful that it's all coming together. So check that out at light.art. There'll be more news here on Twitter. Marcos is really good about updating everything. We're doing more of these Twitter spaces. And of course, if you have any questions, just DM or message or anything. There's a Discord. I hear that's what the kids call it.
Frederick, yeah, I hear. So you know. I'm learning about that.
So definitely if you guys want, check that out. But it's really good to have you guys here. Thank you so much. These are really fun because they're largely unpredictable, which is the whole topic of what we do. Expect the unexpected and plan for spontaneity.
I love it. Great words to end on. And you know, I'll just throw out there, yeah, like I said at the beginning, we'll be doing these regularly on Tuesdays at 5 p.m. Pacific. That's the current schedule. And on Thursdays at 10 a.m. U.S. Pacific. That may change because of spontaneity, but that's where we are right now. And we're also producing, we're in the middle of producing a podcast for Light called Light Artists. We had our first interview. I did the first interview yesterday with Saboud. He's one of the Light Artists. And we talked about his work, and that'll be publishing very soon. Hopefully within the next couple of weeks, we'll push out the first round of interviews. But yeah, a lot of stuff happening in the light. So we'll leave it right there. Thanks everybody for joining us. Thanks to Alaya and Francesco for joining in. Craig Colvin for throwing your thoughts in there. And we'll leave it right there. Yeah, absolutely. We will leave it right there. Thanks everybody. Have a good rest of your day or evening.
Bye bye. Ciao. Enjoy the wine.
Ciao.
Ciao.
See ya. Yeah, I'm gonna get some wine now.
Yeah, well done. Ciao.